V1. Pull up. Pull up. Pull up. Terrain, terrain. Pull up, terrain.
Welcome to the Flight Safety Detectives. Hosts John Golia and Greg Fife, two of the world's most respected aviation safety experts, talk all things related to aviation and aerospace. This podcast and the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel are brought to you by the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, PAMA, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance and your one stop for all general aviation insurance needs. Get a customized quote at Avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Tell them you're a listener of the show and receive a 5% discount. Now it's time to buckle up because it's wheels up for the latest episode of Flight Safety Detectives.
Well, hello, John. It's another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. You and I were on the road. We were in Oshkosh, Wisconsin at Air Venture 2022. Great show. We got to do a lot of things, got to see a lot of people. And of course, we had a great interview, which aired on our podcast and the video channel this past week. One of the things that I did was, of course, give a number of safety presentations. And an accident that I dissected, you and I discussed the fact that we thought that this would be of great interest for our audience. It involves a Cessna 421C model, and it happened down in Lake Worth, Florida, back in 2012. But there were a lot of issues here, and you and I have been talking about pilot training. And now that we have this pilot shortage, and we're putting pilots through these pilot factories, getting them in and out in very short periods of time. One of the concerns that we've both had is the quality of the training, not so much the quantity, but the quality. And this was a perfect accident to demonstrate quality training and how issues regarding that quality can come back and end up causing a fatal accident. And, you know, one of the key things, John, is that I'm really concerned. I know you are. We've talked about it on this show multiple times, and that is not only the type of training, but who is providing that training.
And, you know, it came up often times with the FAA in our discussions. And fortunately, it is on the radar of a number of FAA inspectors. So that's the good news out of all of this. It doesn't help anybody that's gone through this program, you know, a year or two or three or four years earlier, but at least the FAA's got it on their radar, you know, start to address it. And they've also got some of the airline schools on their radar, because they're not too happy with, at least one of them came to us. So it's going to be an ongoing issue, I'm sure. And, you know, our time in the Avemco booth, we had a lot of people come and give us ideas for show. And a lot of people come with us just to say hello. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Of our viewers were at Air Venture. So it was very encouraging to see so many.
Yep. And in the presentation I did regarding this particular accident was well received. I tried to bring a lot of different points, and you and I are going to talk about that today. Again, it's a 421C that crashed down in Lake Worth, Florida, back in December of 2012. And some of the backstory here is, of course, that this pilot, who was actually the owner of the aircraft, had purchased the airplane recently in the July-August timeframe. The airplane went down for maintenance for an annual inspection and actually repaint. So once the airplane was down for maintenance, he decided to go to SIMCOM to get the 421 training and spent a couple of weeks there going through SIMCOM's training program. And anybody that's ever been through a SIMCOM or Flight Safety International, SimuFlight programs like that, no, they're very comprehensive. It's, you know, basically full immersion type training. He went through that training program, and in looking at his training records, it's obvious that he was able to pass all of the requisite training requirements in order for him to receive a graduation certificate, primarily used for insurance purposes. But he had gone through the training in September. The airplane was still down for maintenance from almost 3 months. And he finally was able to retrieve the airplane out of maintenance and paint in December of 2012. And during the course of getting the airplane, he had only logged about an hour and a half in that aircraft, in the accident aircraft. Now, he did have about 145 hours of total flight time in various models of the Cessna 421, but that was over a long period of time. He had also been flying a single engine PA-28, which he owned, and he had well over 1,000 hours of single engine time. He had about 1,230 hours of total flight time. So you're talking, you know, about 175 hours of total multi-engine flight time. But again, that was spread out over a long period of time. And he only had an hour and a half in the accident aircraft. After he retrieved the airplane, there was a mechanic out there at the airport who had interacted with the pilot. He apparently had started the aircraft on a initial start to go out and actually fly out to Lake Okeechobee. He was going to go shoot some approaches and landings and then fly on to his destination, which is Miami. While he was starting the airplane ran briefly, both engines cranked. And then he shut them down and apparently had an alternator charging light. So maintenance went out there. They finally determined that it was nothing spectacular. They fixed it. Pilot cranked again, got both engines running. Satin did a run-up, basically a pre-flight run-up on the ramp for a couple to two, three, 4 minutes before taxiing off to runway 3. In Lake Worth. And so, you know, all sounds normal. There were a number of people out there watching this pilot and this airplane with great interest, of course, including the mechanic. And they saw the airplane taxi out. The pilot lined up on the end of the runway, powered up. And from all the witness observations, the at least initial part of the takeoff appeared normal. Airplane rotated about halfway down the runway, and shortly after takeoff and during the climb out, they noticed that the airplane started to yaw left for 1 to 2 seconds, nose pitched up substantially, and then rolled over to the left in what was described by a flight instructor as a VMC roll. The airplane then went into the ground from a low altitude, steep nose low, left wing low attitude, collided with a bunch of palm trees in a park, struck some very stout concrete picnic type tables, and the airplane came to rest, exploded, and burned. And in looking at the wreckage, the airplane is sitting, and we'll have these pictures posted on our website as well, so that you all can look at these pictures. But the airplane was sitting upright at the accident site. It was very easy to identify all the requisite parts of the aircraft. But there are some notable findings, John, that we're going to talk about. But we're also going to talk about pilot training, because this whole issue, this loss of the aircraft, and unfortunately this pilot losing his life, was all due to the failures that he apparently, in at least, you know, did not follow his requisite training that that he had received only 3 months before.
Yes, and it's important for us to go through that, because the NTSB did not go through it very well. Now, at this point in time, I'd like to tell our audience that this show is responding to a very large number of emails that we received to shorten this show up. So we're going to make every effort to make these shows 15 to 20 minutes long. And they want us to analyze more of the accidents, not just go through what the NTSB said and do a once over lightly that we have been doing at the end. So this show is going to mark the first in a series, and we'll see how it goes, and we'll see what the audience says. But we're going to do a short introduction to the accident, and then in the next show, we're going to go through it step by step by step on what they found, what they recorded, what was missing from the report, if anything, and take it from there. In the pieces that may be missing, did it have an impact on the probable cause or not? So
that's a real teaser, John. You just set up the audience, you roped them, and now you're going to pull them in, but you're going to give them a little slack. So that is the teaser.
That is the teaser. A lot of the people that came by the Avemco booth, where we spent a lot of time, were raising these issues. So it's not necessarily our idea, but we will respond to what our listeners want for content and for the methods in which we analyze it. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a great accident to try our little beta test with, because there are a number of issues that were identified in this particular accident. You have operational issues. You have some maintenance related issues, which resulted in the loss of power on the left engine. And of course, we have training issues. And all of these things need to be explored and should have been explored thoroughly by the NTSB. However, in reviewing their report and even the docket, there were a lot of holes. And that's where the information, that's where the lessons learned are. And that's why you and I, when we dissect these accidents and we look at the backstories and we ferret out all this additional information, that's the key for our listeners and our viewers to really learn something. Just reading a report that identifies some factual information and comes up with, and the board coming up with a simplistic probable cause, does not benefit aviation safety, because there are no lessons. All it is a documentation of an accident without really identifying where the failures, where the shortcomings occurred, that can be used as lessons learned. Going back into a training program, going back into an individual's training program, of course, looking at maintenance issues and that kind of thing. And these are the valuable things that you and I try to bring out when we dissect these accidents.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that the reason why we're looking at training accidents right now is because we've had so many accidents just this year alone with what appears to be obvious training deficiencies, with some new pilots and with some pretty substantial time pilots as well. Just as this one is 1,200 hours, it's not a newbie, but we've got them. We've got crashes with new guys and very experienced people happening, especially landing in the last couple of months. Not a lot of landing accidents. So
yeah, I mean that's, and again, you know, we're going to be dissecting a lot of these landing accidents, because is it a function of complacency? Is it a function of lack of proficiency? Or is it a training issue that that started well before the pilot has technically gained all of this, quote, experience? You know, one of the things that we always look at with training is the quality of the training. It's one thing to know how to fly. It's another thing to understand how to fly. And we always talk about, you know, the subjectivity or the subjective part of flying, and that is decision-making, aeronautical decision-making. Do you have the requisite tools to identify those things that are going to have a significant influence on the operation of the aircraft, especially when it comes to flying a multi-engine airplane? You cannot take it for granted. You cannot expect that every time you fire up both those engines, they're both going to be operating without a problem. And in this particular instance, you know, some of the time we put too much trust, tacit trust, if you will, in the maintenance of our aircraft. I have a mechanic that's worked on my airplanes forever. I had a lot of tacit trust in his personal skills, abilities, and knowledge fixing the aircraft. But, you know, the old Reagan saying, trust but verify. You always have to anticipate or expect that you're going to have a problem, especially when the airplane comes out of maintenance. Because, again, Nobody's infallible. And I think this accident that we're dissecting is a perfect example of a little bit of maybe too much trust in the maintenance, the fact that it just came out of maintenance and everybody thought it was good to go. And then all of a sudden you have a problem right at takeoff. I mean, you should be able to just respond and respond properly. And we're really going to get into the requisite procedures that should have been followed, technically partially followed, and the resulting actions both by the pilot and the maintenance folks.
Okay. With that, I will give you the second last word.
Well, I hope that everybody will tune in for the next show, because we will dissect those things that we've teased you with regard to this accident. We're going to be looking at again, the pilot and the type of training that he received, the quality of that training, some of the shortcomings. And there are things that I, as an investigator, would have really gone after that the NTSB investigators did not follow up on. And I think that's where a lot of the story is. So we're going to be definitely talking about those issues. So I look forward to seeing, or at least having you listening or watching the show next week. So with that, John, I will now leave you with the last word.
Okay. So my last words will always be the pre-flight, pre-planning, pre-flight, and flying safely. But before we get there, I just wanted to let everybody know that we had a wonderful time at the Avemco booth. We have a tremendous following out there that I was really pleased to see that people are very interested in the accident side and talking about the accidents and bringing accidents to us. I left the Avemco booth with another dozen accidents for us to look at. I haven't had a chance yet to pick those out, but they sure sounded like meaty accidents for us to do. And so, and of course, that one young lady that we had on that had an accident that went through and identified all her failures and all her shortcomings in that, and to have her willing to share that to everybody was just unbelievable.
Yep.
Very proud of that young lady. I think she is going to be a very fine pilot. And having said that, now, remember, if you're going to go flying, do a good job of pre-planning. Before you even leave the house or the hotel, pre-plan what's going on. Get to the airport, go over it all again. Make sure you know where you're going to put the airplane if you have an engine failure on takeoff. Right? Think ahead. Plan ahead. When you get out to the airplane, a very thorough pre-flight inspection. I mean, can uncover a number of problems with the airplane. And if you get in the air, please put that head on a swivel and fly safely.
To listen or watch more episodes of this show, go to FlightSafetyDetectives.com, the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel, or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. To contact John and Greg about the show, send them an email at FlightSafetyDetectives@gmail.com. And remember, for aviation insurance needs, contact Avemco Insurance at Avemco.com. Or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Mention Flight Safety Detectives and receive a 5% discount. Thanks for listening to the Flight Safety Detectives, and remember to always fly safe.
Take your holiday as seriously as British Airways Holidays takes your holiday. So ditch your desk, set your out-of-office on, and unwind on the white sandy beaches of the Dominican Republic. With an all-inclusive, family-friendly break at the Grand Palladium Palace Resort and Spa. Or luxurious adult-only getaway at the TRS Turquesa Hotel. Book now with a low deposit at ba.com/palladium. T's and C's apply. At all protected.